Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Questions by the Sages. Text number 5. Word meanings. Te, the sages, ekada, one day, two, but, munaya, sages, prata, morning, huta, burning, huta agnaya, the sacrificial fire, sat kritam, due respects, suktam, Sri Sukta Goswami, asinam, seated on, Paprachu, made inquiry, idam, on this, as follows, adarat, with due regards. Taikadatam tu munaya, pratar huta hutatnaya, satkritam sutamasinam,
Paprachuridamadarat
Taikatatu munaya
Taikatatu munaya
Pratar huta hutaknaya
Satkritam sutamasinam
Paprachuridamadarat Ekatatu munaya
Ekatatu munaya
Pratar huta hutaknaya
Pratar huta hutaknaya
Satkritam sutamasinam
Satkritam sutamasinam
Paprachuridamadara Translation. One day after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Sukta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. The great sages offered... The great sages offered the speaker of the Bhagavatam an elevated seat of respect called the Vyasa Asana, or the seat of Srila Vyasadeva. Sri Vyasadeva is the original spiritual preceptor for all men, and all other preceptors are considered to be his representatives. A representative is one who can exactly present the viewpoint of Sri Vyasadeva. Sri Vyasadeva impregnated the message of Bhagavatam unto Srila Shukadeva Goswami, and Sri Suta Goswami heard it from him, Sri Shukadeva Goswami. All bona fide representatives of Sri Vyasadeva in the chain of disciplic succession are to be understood to be Goswamis. These Goswamis restrain all their senses, and they stick to the path made by the previous acharyas. The Goswamis do not deliver lectures on the Bhagavatam capriciously. Rather, they execute their services most carefully, following their predecessors who delivered the spiritual message unbroken to them. Those who listen to the Bhagavatam may put questions to the speaker in order to elicit the clear meaning, but this should not be done in a challenging spirit. One must submit questions with a great regard for the speaker and the subject matter. This is also the way recommended in Bhagavad Gita. One must learn the transcendental subject by submissive oral reception from the right sources. Therefore, these sages address the speaker, Suta Goswami, with great respect. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Mena Tasmay Sri Gurave Namaha. Ekadatu munaya pratar huta utagnaya satkritam sutam asinam papasur idam adara. One day after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Suta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. Our great story is just beginning. It begins once upon a time, more or less. Ta'ekada, one day. We heard in the previous verse where they were. They're at Naimisharanya, special holy place. The place is still there today. People are still going there. We had a BTG article on it some years ago, Bhakti Vikash Swami. So this was an actual event that took place many thousands of years ago. All these sages assembled. I've seen numbers in different places that generally it said thousands of sages. One place I saw 30,000. I don't know. Sometimes you find these things on the internet. It's hard to understand whether they're authoritative or not. Any case, there were a lot. You can imagine 30,000. That's like a whole stadium full of sages. You always wonder, how did they all hear? Yeah. Actually, whenever I read the Bhagavatam, I was thinking of this the other day. Right from the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we come across things that are inconceivable to us. And pretty much all the way through. There are all kinds of things that go on. Like a woman is pregnant and she gets impregnated with another child, like, what? How's that happen? That doesn't work. There's so many things like that, so many magical things. Of course, even the Bhagavad Gita on the battlefield, all these amazing things are going on. And a lot of people, when they, you know, if they just come across it, they'll just right away, they'll say, what? I've told this story before that Damodar Maharaj, he says that when his father saw Bhagavad Gita and started reading it, he was just turned off right away because of the conch shell. People blowing conch shells and breaking people's hearts just by blowing, stealing away their fearlessness by breaking their hearts, just by blowing concha. How can I take this seriously? So sometimes, you know, may look at the Bhagavatam and think, well, all these stories, all this weird things. Pretty much it starts right away. You know, as the story begins later in the seventh chapter, we have the Brahmastra. What is a Brahmastra? Who ever heard of a Brahmastra? So even here we could say, well, how do all these people hear? Maybe Sutta Goswami had a really good voice, but you have to have a really good voice to speak to thousands of people. So we, of course, I think as devotees, we just take it in stride. All right, Bhagavatam says so. All our acharyas accept the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada accepts the Bhagavatam. So whatever, what do I know? Like Prabhupada would, he challenged the devotee. What do you know? You don't even know. All you know is the inside of your mother's womb. That's a little bit of hyperbole, it's called. You know, you want to make the point. You don't know anything. You're like a person that hasn't even been born yet. That's how much you know. So there's so much to know. What is our experience? We have such a limited experience. So we rely on what the sages are telling us. So in any case, so this verse today begins. One day, the sages assembled in the morning. They had all gathered. And they lit the sacrificial fire. I don't know how that works exactly, but what that's about. But the sacrificial fire, of course, the sacrificial fire represents Lord Vishnu. So you're invoking his presence there. And it has to be there every day. And so that's the auspicious beginning of the day, early in the morning, to light the sacrificial fire. We do it in a different way. We get fired up. We light our sacrificial fire at Mangalarti, and we get up early. Prabhupada says here, morning is the best time to hold spiritual services. So our sacrificial fire is to get fired up for the morning program, or fired up for our sadhana, do the things we have to do, light our sacred fire within the heart. So traditionally, there was some kind of fire was started, probably by mantra, or rubbing together two pieces of arani wood. And then they offered a seat of esteem to Sri Srila Sutta Goswami. Now this Prabhupada's purport today, I found it interesting that Prabhupada, basically he went through the verse step by step, you know, the several points that are raised, and he just took each one of them and said a little something about it. He doesn't always do that. Sometimes Prabhupada will just take maybe one word from the verse, and then he'll give a five-page purport on inspired by what he, you know, one thing in the verse. It sparks some bhava in him, and he speaks. And he doesn't necessarily go through the verse carefully, step by step, analyzing it. But he's done that here with this particular verse. Of course, this is Prabhupada is the very beginning of his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's just diving into it at this point. What we can also see if you look at Srila Prabhupada's, the earlier purports also that we read, and if you look at Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, you'll see how Prabhupada is definitely looking at Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary and other commentaries. Now we know he had these, there were two books actually I read somewhere, books of commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam by a whole range of acharyas actually. Prabhupada relied heavily on Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So that's how he set out to write his commentary in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here he says, they offered a seat of esteem to Sutta Goswami. Now we know, of course, later in the Bhagavatam, Sutta Goswami, he's the son of Romaharshan Sutta. Sutta is like a family name. Actually, it's a caste. Sutta is a mixed caste. It means a Brahmin father and a Kshatriya mother. Now, we hear often, I don't know, I tried to confirm this, but I wasn't sure, but we know there are different reciters. Whenever there's a big celebration, big event, we have the Suttas, the Magadhas, and the Vandis. So I don't know if those Suttas are the same as this mixed caste Sutta. But the suttas are definitely reciters. That's one thing they do. There's one place that I read where it says that the suttas, they're sort of like subordinate brahmanas in a sense. So they're mixed caste. And they do recite the Vedas, but they do it under the direction of the brahmanas. So the brahmanas are like their guides, and they maybe tell them what to say for this ceremony and guide them in certain ways. So even though they were in a mixed caste, and there is some concern about that, you might say, it says when Roma Harshan was killed by Lord Balaram, then it was remembered, I don't remember if it says that Balaram remembered or the sages remembered that, well, he was a mixed caste anyway, so you know, he had this flaw. And of course, the result was, or somehow, he offended Lord Balaram, and then Balaram killed him. So Roma Harshan had actually been just like this. He had been given the seat of esteem to recite the Puranas, to recite the Vedic literature. And the sages, they said, well, you know, you're really not supposed to kill the guy who's going to speak here, said to Lord Balaram. So, said, well, give me some penance to do. So they said, well, we have these demons around here. Maybe you could get rid of these demons that are keep disturbing us. So Balaram, what was his name? Bilvala? Something like that. Especially one demon. He kills one demon. Then he went on pilgrimage, of course. That was really his so-called penance, was to go on pilgrimage. Balvala. Yeah, that's what his name is. So then Suta Goswami, he took over. And he recited, now I read someplace that he recited all of the Puranas, not just the Bhagavatam. But yesterday I was looking online, I found different references where it says that he recited the Mahabharata, and definitely the Bhagavat Purana, and Harivamsa. People are at least agree that he spoke those different literatures. Of course, the Harivamsa is the supplement to the Mahabharata. So here it says that he was given this seat, this elevated seat, among all those great sages there. One of those sages, of course, the main questioner, the head of the sages, was Shaunaka Rishi. I tried to find out more about Shaunaka Rishi because I came across something recently that made it seem like he's very, very old. Now here it says, upcoming verse, it says that you're the eldest of the learned Vedantas. It says about Suta Goswami. But in the genealogy in the ninth canto, before King Yayati, after Pururava, which is way back, a long time ago, there's a sage, someone named Shaunaka, who's mentioned, and it's said about him that he was a sage who was expert in the Rig Veda. So I'm not sure if it's the same person or not, but it seems to indicate, well, maybe it is the same person, I don't know. Because we know that sometimes these persons in the Vedic context, we hear about them. Some of them live for a very, very long time. So in any case, Shaunaka Rishi was also there, and other so many great sages. But Suta Goswami was the one deputed to speak. And he was, of course, as Prabhupada says here, great sages offered the speaker of the Bhagavatam an elevated seat of respect called the Vyasasana. So we know why it's called the Vyasasana, because it's the asana of Vyasadeva. As Prabhupada says here, you had to be, what was the word he said? Oh, exactly, yes, he said, a representative of Vyasadeva is one who can exactly present the viewpoint of Sri Vyasadeva. So no speculation. It has to be supported by Sri Vyasadeva, the parampara, basically. To speak on the Bhagavatam, you have to follow the parampara. Prabhupada, of course, trained us in this way. And he was very critical of those who didn't follow the truth of Vyasadeva, who got up there and just spoke so much nonsense. You know, there Prabhupada, he was invited at least one time, maybe more than one time, to speak at some Bhagavad Gita convention. It may have been at Kurukshetra. So he went there and he didn't like it very much. All Mayavadi, saying all kinds of nonsense things. It really disturbed him. I went to one of those one time, because I spent a couple of months in Rishikesh. We had a small temple there. And I went with a devotee, an Indian devotee. So, but fortunately, they were speaking all in Hindi. All the speakers, all these big, they call themselves, or they're called Maha Mandaleshwar. You know, they're big, big shots, you know. They're all fat with big beards. You know. The way we think of them, that's what they are, actually. A lot of them. And so mostly, you know, this devotee was sitting and listening, and I was sitting, I was trying to pass time, I was writing slokas down. You know. And so he told me some of the things they said after. He said, well, actually, he turned to me at one point. He said, he's calling the guy who just spoke the real Bhagavan, actual Bhagavan. So this is a nonsense they speak on. I mean, they're supposed to be speaking about Krishna, but they're speaking nonsense things. They're supposed to be speaking in the line of Vyasadeva. Of course, the Bhagavatam, it was comes from Vyasadeva. It comes in disciplic succession, actually through Vyasadeva, from Krishna to Brahma to Narada to Vyas. Recently I mentioned, I said, because there's this verse in the 12th canto that gives this line. And because what we'll hear about in the first canto, we know that Vyasadeva was disturbed. He wasn't happy, didn't feel completely satisfied about all the work that he had done. And Narada Muni comes there and tells him to compile the Bhagavatam. And we don't hear Narada Muni instructing him, or actually giving him the Bhagavatam. But there is a verse later in the Bhagavatam that says he actually taught him the Srimad Bhagavatam. He spoke to him the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, Bhagavatam can be spoken in four verses. Maybe he didn't. I don't know how long the instruction was. If you have the essence of the Bhagavatam, Krishna gave the Bhagavatam in four verses to Lord Brahma. So you can give the essence in just a few verses. So in any case, it comes down to Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva, generally it's accepted. Now we don't have, in the beginning of the first verse, it doesn't say Vyasa Uvacha. It just begins, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And I actually read somewhere, I think it was something that Gopi Pranadana Prabhu wrote, or another ISKCON Sanskrit scholar, said that sometimes the scribes who put these oral traditions into writing, they would sometimes add this at the beginning when they were starting to write. They would write, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Then they would actually pen the book. So it may not be that Vyasadeva himself wrote it. It could be that someone in his disciplic succession, you might say, wrote it. In any case, it doesn't say here Vyasa Uvacha before the first verse. But all our acharyas, they accept that Vyasadeva wrote these three invocation verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now what I find interesting, and this is something that I just noticed recently, was that the beginning of the second chapter of the Bhagavatam begins Vyasa Uvacha. And I think that's the only place, I'm pretty sure that's the only place in the whole Bhagavatam, the beginning of the second chapter, the first canto, it begins Vyasuvacha. And Prabhupada doesn't include it in his translation. Actually, I think, what does it say? It says Vyasuvacha, but then it's actually, then Sutta Goswami begins speaking. So he doesn't say Vyas said, and then Sutta Goswami said, anyway, so Vyasadeva is the one who's right. Usually it said, Vyasadeva wrote the Bhagavatam. Now, actually, literally, it doesn't say that he wrote it. It said that he made it. Krite. Mahamuni Krite. I would have, Krite just means to make something, or compose, you might say. I think there's a different word for write, likhyati or something like that, which means to actually write. So in any case, he's the one who has delivered it to us, brought it together, this Srimad Bhagavatam that we have, this particular version of the Bhagavatam comes from Srila Vyasadeva. So to go on with Srila Prabhupada's purport, so again he says that it's interesting because, so he mentions Vyasadeva, then he mentions Shukadeva Goswami, then he mentions Sutta Goswami. And it seems like that Prabhupada is thinking, well, I just said two Goswamis, Shukadeva Goswami and Sutta Goswami. Because then he says in the next word, in the next line, all bona fide representatives of Srila Vyasadeva in the chain of disciplic succession are considered to be Goswamis. So whether they're named Goswami or not, so this is sort of like a family name, Sutta Goswami, Shukadeva Goswami, Sutta Goswami. So everyone in the disciplic succession is considered to be a Goswami. Now this, of course, Prabhupada, we know that there are caste Goswamis. And these caste Goswamis, Jati Gosai, in the Bengali, Jati Gosai, which means Goswamis by birth. So they're included in the list of the 13 Upasampradayas compiled by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So in some sense, they're considered, especially, I think the idea is that it's sort of like being a caste brahmana, and you think, well, that's it, I'm a brahmana. As Prabhupada said, just because you have a two-piece thread doesn't mean you're an actual brahmana, even though you're born in a brahmin family. So being a caste Goswami is not a disqualification in and of itself, but it's also not a qualification in and of itself. You have to become qualified as an actual Goswami. Because I was thinking in the context of Srila Prabhupada, where he also would, where he would support this idea, the caste Goswamis, this is Upa Sampradaya, but at the same time, he was friends with caste Goswami. He was very close with, like, Padmanabha Goswami of the Radharaman temple. So it's not that he disdained him just because his last name was Goswami and he was technically a caste Goswami, but he was actually a Goswami in the sense of being a follower of Srila Vyasadeva, someone fit to describe, to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Radharaman temple, of course, they're very bona fide, coming from Gopal Bhatta Goswami. I think the history is something like that, that these temples were started by the Goswamis, and then the priests, somehow they picked up the name Goswami, became their family name, even though they weren't sannyasis. They somehow acquired the family name Goswami. So Srila Prabhupada said, these Goswamis, those in the cyclic discussion, the Bhagavatam, authorized Bhagavatam reciters in Parampara, they restrain all their senses and they stick to the path made by the previous acharyas. So Goswami, of course, means one who controls the senses. So the beginning of the Upadeshamrita, Vachu Vegam, Manasakrodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Pasta Vegam. So Vega means the urges. We have urges. Vachu Vegam, the urge to speak, of course, especially the urge to speak Prajalpa. It's a very powerful force, actually. You know, the Quakers, what they do at the Quakers meeting, they don't talk. Well, actually, what they do is they all sit quietly, and then if the Spirit moves them, then they'll speak. So, like, God inspired me to say something, and they'll say something. It's supposed to be spiritual, of course. I don't know what they say. By the way, that's Krishna Kripa Prabhu, our Krishna Kripa Brahmachari. He was raised as a Quaker. So the idea is that we have to control our tongue, be quiet. Of course, what is our idea? Some of the sages, they take mauna vrata. They don't say anything. Of course, I don't know if anybody's still doing these things, but there used to be people who would do that. And what they would do sometimes, instead of speaking, they would just write it down. They'd carry around a little chalkboard. Did Yogi Bhajan do that, I think, maybe? He met with Srila Prabhupada, I think. Maybe he did that. He was a Sikh, I think, Yogi Bhajan. But he used to do that. He carried a little, chalkboard hanging from a string around his neck, I think. So, but it's the same thing, really. I mean, whether your words come out or you write it down, you're still communicating. It's like, I got to speak, but I can't speak it, so I'll just write it down and show it to you. Really, what's the difference? Pretty much the same thing. This is Vachu Vegam. I got something to say. I got to say it. It's like children in class sometimes, in school, they can't hold their tongue and get in trouble. I used to have that trouble a little bit, actually, believe it or not. When I was a kid in school, I remember when I was in third grade, I had to write on the blackboard 100 times, I shall not talk in class. I don't know if I made it to all 100. That's a lot for a third grader. So Vachu Vegam, we have this tendency. So the Goswami has to control the say Vachu Vegam, Manasa, controlling the mind. Forget how Prabhupada translates that exactly. The mind's demands, something like that. Vachu Vegam, Manasa, Krodha, anger. Anger is that's a difficult one. What is anger? Anger after frustration. That's one of the things that Lord Brahma creates at the beginning of the universe. Anger after frustration. So that's the root of anger. You want something and you don't get it. So you become angry and it just pollutes your consciousness. Vachu Vegam, Manasa Krodha, Jiva Vegam, then the tongue, the tongue has two problems. It wants to speak and it wants to eat. It wants to taste. So Jiva, though, you have to control your tongue first. We do that by taking prasadam and talking about Krishna. Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udara Prastha Vegam, then the belly and the genitals. So These have to be controlled. That's a real Goswami. So to go on here, so it says they don't, these Goswamis who have control of their senses, they don't deliver the Bhagavatam capriciously. Capricious means whimsical. Prabhupada, he decries whimsical. In the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we hear about the divine and demoniac natures. One of the main qualities of the demoniac is that they're whimsical. And the definition of whimsical there means they don't act according to scripture. Whimsical means I just want to do it. Just do it. That's the motto of the 60s. Right? Just do it. If it feels good, do it. That was it. That's the motto of the 60s. Don't worry, but that's, of course, that's pretty prominent today, too. There's not a lot of self-control. So, similarly speaking on the Bhagavatam, you don't just say anything you want. Use the Bhagavatam or use the Bhagavad Gita to support what you're saying. But you follow the disciplic succession and you speak in that way. So it probably says, they execute their services most carefully, following their predecessors who delivered the spiritual message unbroken to them. And this is Parampara. Then he says, those who listen to the Bhagavatam may put questions. So this is, Prabhupada's just going step by step through this verse, because this is also, after they gave Vyasadeva or Suta Goswami a seat of esteem, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. So then Prabhupada mentions this is also recommended in Bhagavad Gita. Of course, he's referring. Now, what you find actually in Prabhupada, especially in the earlier cantos, especially in the first canto, he doesn't quote very many verses. He quotes hardly any, actually. Once in a while, he'll quote a line here, part of a verse. But you can find all the way through, he's actually quoting verses, but he's only quoting the English, basically. He's just saying what the verse says without giving the Sanskrit. So here Prabhupada is obviously referring to Tadvidi Paranipati Na Pariprashnena Sevaya Upadekshantite Jnanam Jnanas Tattvadarshana. So in that verse it says Pariprashna. Here the word was Prapachu. So Pra is expansive, means to ask all around. So the same thing with Pari. Pariprashnena means you ask all around. The subject, you can inquire fully, so you get a full, rounded understanding of the subject. Pariprashnena. But sevaya, you have to go with humble submission. Tadvidi pranipatena. So the first thing is pranipatena. Prabhupada would quote this from some Sanskrit dictionary. What is it? Pratishtarupena nipat iti prashnena. Something like that. Iti prashna. That you, or prati. Maybe that's the definition of dandava. Anyway, the idea of submission is that you put your whole body down. That's the idea. This is another thing I was thinking when I was beginning the class about, you know, we just take everything in stride that we hear. I was thinking also, just like for us, we offer dandavats. Well, for a lot of people, they see that and they're like, oh my, what is this? What are these people doing? It just came up recently in one of the, I think some of you may get by email this Prabhupada Today. They come out every day, some little excerpt of Prabhupada Leela. So there was one recently, I think it was where I saw that, where someone was complaining about that. What is this? You're sitting on this big seat and people are coming and bowing down to you. This just isn't right. We live in an egalitarian society. Why are you sitting on this big seat and people are bowing down? But we don't think anything about it. We don't flat out offer our dandavats. Of course, it can also become mechanical. We're supposed to be offering our mind. We're supposed to be offering our actual self. It's supposed to be atmanivedana. That's what it signifies. Not just we just do. And either, even, of course, Prabhupada criticized, like, you know, Shrutakirti talks about this. But he always going in and out of Prabhupada's room all the time. So he got into the habit where, and he knew I had to offer my obeisances every time I go in. But sometimes he would go in and he would just go real quick and just put his head down and come back up. And Prabhupada said, what is this hatchet? This is a hatchet movement. No, you actually, if you're coming to offer obeisances, you actually offer your obeisances. So that's part of asking inquiry, that you have this mood, submissive oral reception, your submissive inquiry and submissive reception. And you ask about the subject. There's some early lectures of Srila Prabhupada where sometimes people would just ask questions that had nothing to do with what Prabhupada was talking about. And he would say, no, you ask about what I have just spoken about. That's what you inquire about. You inquire about the subject matter. So he also made the point here. One must submit questions with great regard for the speaker and the subject matter. So actually there's another, I remember, this may be in one of those Acharya videos, which I haven't seen for a long time. But there are the people in the audience, there are some professors or something, and they just start talking to each other, like arguing with each other, talking to each other. So Prabhupada's servant or secretary interrupts them and said, no, you've come here, here's the authority. You've come here, listen to him. Don't just talk about it. It's like two kids in class talking to each other. But here's the teacher. Actually, I was going to mention this word preceptor. What is the preceptor? We use this word preceptor. Maybe we use it, we don't even know what it means. What are precepts? Precepts are the teaching. So the preceptor really is just kind of a fancy word for teacher. A preceptor, the one who enlightens you in the precepts of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You say the teacher of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. That's what preceptor means. So the Bhagavatam, these are all teachers. All of these Goswamis, as Prabhupada calls them in the disciplic succession, they're all teachers of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and we hear from them submissively without challenging. Because if you challenge, then what's the point? Just like people would sometimes come to hear. Usually people were respectful. That's one thing. Generally, there are certain examples when people weren't. There's someone, I think it was in Philadelphia, some professor was really offensive, and Prabhupada had someone escort him out, Brahmananda, I think. It was big enough to say, come with me, sir. But generally, people were respectful. But they weren't always, you know, hearing submissively. They didn't necessarily become, you know, followers of Srila Prabhupada or take up Krishna consciousness. But at least they were, they could see that this is, you know, an elderly, respectable gentleman, and just, they would offer him the common courtesy of listening respectfully. So that's good, of course, that's to their merit that they did that. But more respectful is to actually take to heart and see this person as a, as an actual authority. I mentioned one time, when I was doing Leelamrita research, I was interviewing people. Some of them had already mentioned, had been interviewed before, but I was going for kind of a cleanup, see, making sure we, Professor Umar wanted to make sure we got everything. So one of the persons I interviewed was Professor O'Connell, Joseph O'Connell, who was actually a friend, I think he may have passed away in the last couple of years, but he was a very good friend of ISKCON. I don't want to, you know, make light of that. But one thing he said to me when I was interviewing him, because these people tend to also be eclectic, especially their scholars, you know, they tend to see things in a relative kind of way. So he said, you know, actually, A.C. Bhaktivedanta, he wasn't my ideal of a spiritual person, because he wasn't interested in learning from anybody else. In other words, learning from another tradition. He said, I like Thomas Merton. You know, he was a Catholic, but even towards the end, he was hearing Buddhism. He was entertaining the Buddhist ideas. So it immediately occurred to me is that he doesn't understand the idea of a self-realized soul. He doesn't have to hear from anybody else. It's not that he's still learning and he has to hear from some other tradition because maybe he hasn't gotten it figured out all yet. No, he's hearing from, of course, Prabhupada has heard submissively from the parampara. And he has self-realized knowledge. It's not that he's still on his deathbed, he's still searching, trying to figure out. When I think when I first became a devotee, one of my brothers said, just remember, never stop searching. Don't think that you've found it. You know? You have to. Of course, what are people doing? They're searching around in dark. You know that old joke about the drunk looking for his keys under the spotlight, under the street light? And somebody asked him, what are you looking for? I'm looking for my car keys. Is this where you dropped them? No, I dropped them over there, but the light's over here. So people, they don't look where they should be looking, but they look at what they're familiar with, you might say. So, no, you have to hear from the authorized source if you want to get real authorized knowledge. So these sages, their consensus, apparently, as that Sutta Goswami is authorized. Of course, he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. And Shukadeva Goswami was speaking with Narada Muni and Vyasadeva in the audience listening to him. So he's got pretty good credentials to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the association he's had. Those are the preceptors he has heard from. All right, we'll stop here. I don't know if I need to. I'll read the translation again. One day after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Sutta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. So now we'll hear the Rishi's questions. And the next verse begins, Rishaya Uchu. The Rishi said, then they'll give their six questions. In the beginning of the next chapter, Sutta Goswami will begin answering their six questions. Srivikram Prabhu.
So the suttas, they're supposed to memorize and recite the Puranas and other literatures. And they also were to take care of horses and chariots. That was their duty. But
I can't hear. There's some motor going.
Yes. So they were to memorize the Puranas and recite it at different, I guess, religious places and so. And they were to take care of horses and chariots.
Horses and chariots.
Horses and chariots. Yeah, that's also part of their duty. I don't know. If because they have to use it to travel or walk with them. That's how it's taken.
I would expect that these sages all walk there. I don't think sages were used to walking, riding in chariots.
Well, whatever it is.
Of course, they may have been kings and princes. They're called sages. So.
Remember when Karna was called Sutaputra, and that was a big insult because his father takes care of chariot and so, you know, so. But anyhow, my question is interpolation. That's the word, interpolate. The chances for that is there, right? Because they're memorizing and reciting, but then they can also add in or subtract. How do we verify? I mean, what's the way to verify that?
Well, that's why besides Shastra, we have sadhu and guru, so they're there to. I mentioned in recent class that Sridhar Swami has gone through the Bhagavatam verse by verse and Vishnu Purana verse by verse. So we know he accepted all those slokas as bona fide, so we accept them as bona fide. But there are other literatures, may not be. We don't always know. I know a rule of thumb, Gopi Puranadhan Prabhu said, like the Bhavishya Purana, I also mentioned, is highly interpolated. A lot of things have been inserted in it. He said maybe half of it's not authorized. So the safest thing, if you're quoting Bhavishya Purana, you quote only what our acharyas have quoted from Bhavishya Purana. Otherwise, you may be quoting something bogus. So we need that guidance, actually. That's why it's a little, you know, it's a little dangerous. Even some of our Sanskrit scholars, they may be translating other works. So they try to be really careful. Because generally, there are different editions, different of different works. But they look to see, for example, well, this edition was printed by the Gaudiya Mutt. So, you know, this was accepted as bona fide by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So this is the version that we'll use for our translation and so on. So there has to be some care taken. Because you're right, there can be interpolation put in over the years. The Bhagavatam I've heard Ridhananda Maharaj say this, that the Bhagavatam is relatively free of any interpolation. Sometimes here and there may be, well, this verse is sometimes in one edition it has this word in it instead of that word. There's not a lot that's contested in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very clean. You might say it's because Krishna has safeguarded it. He has protected it over time so that it will arrive for us to take advantage of in a clean state. But not all, you know, there may be questions about other shastras.
Earlier in your class, you had mentioned about, you know, that speaking to so many sages, how do they hear? So I heard one, I read one comment by Ridhananda Maharaj on the Mahabharata, like when Maharaj Yudhishthira was speaking or on the battlefield, that they had mystic powers, mm-hmm, that was able to transmit without a microphone. Mm.
That makes sense. There's so much mystic. And as you started speaking, I was thinking, well, all the soldiers had mystic power. So not the hearers, but the speaker. The speaker had the power to transmit. It reminds me, I hear the military is trying to develop weapons that go straight into your brain, you know, sound that goes into your brain and kind of messes you up. They can put thoughts into your brain. Of course, this is their research. You know, they're always trying to come up with a new kind of weapon. So they'll try, if they can come up with mystic power like that, they'll weaponize it. That's always, the military always gets hold of it. So the sages, they use that mystic power to enlighten people. Yeah, that's a nice answer. Yeah, they certainly had incredible powers in former ages, so they could speak to thousands of people at the same time without shouting.
Sutta Goswami glorifying Sukhdev Goswami on the second chapter. Second verse, Jam Prabhajantam Anupetam Upetya Kritam Jaipayana Viraha Katra Juhava Putraiti Tanmaya Tarava Vinejush Tam Sarva Bhuta Ridayam Muni Matrasmi. That Sukhdev Goswami entered into the heart of all the listener and speaking in their heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I noticed Jiva Goswami quotes this verse often.
Yes, I heard the commentary, that's why. You know.
Yeah.
Tam sarva bhuta
hridayam. Tam sarva bhuta hridayam munim anatosmi. It says, you can enter into the hearts of all. He is the same. It's Sutta Goswami glorifying Shukadeva Goswami as he begins speaking. He's glorifying his guru. So this is one of the things he says about him. That he can enter into the hearts of all. So he can speak, he can enter within them. He can touch their hearts by his speech. No microphone required. All right. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.